heavyweight champ Tyson Fury is back on BT Sport box office for another all-British blockbuster.
I am the Gypsy King.
With a unification fight looming against Usyk, old rival Derek Chisora provides the final test.
Watch me take the crown from the Gypsy King.
Watch all this and more Saturday, exclusively live on BT Sport box office.
I'm knocking Chisora into retirement.
Listeners, welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 147 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I'm joined this week by my lovely co-host, Linda Serovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you as well. We are recording this on the Tuesday after Thanksgiving, and it's been a while since we recorded, although not much has actually happened because this is like the true dead period of the off season. Between like the stuff that happens sort of immediately, like the Edwin Diaz signing and the winter meetings, and Thanksgiving happens and really nothing happens. But
the Mets went shopping on Black Friday last year.
Why did they let us down? I know. I mean, like, I wrote this down like in my show notes when I was like during the baseball segment to like cover the like few signings that have happened, like non-Mets related, but like people in general seem like distressed by like, or like bored or whatever. And I think that people have like forgotten that this is how the off season usually is. The lockdown kind of like ruined everyone's brains and like it like forced a lot of like early signings because of the lockout.
Yeah.
And this year there is no such threat of a lockout. So it's progressing more like a normal off season, which is very boring in the beginning.
Yeah, I think even was it today or yesterday was the anniversary of them signing Scherzer too.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, maybe today. Cause I think November 28th, they signed like Marte and Escobar. Or maybe it was like November 27th. And like 2 days later, they signed.
Whatever that Black Friday was, they like signed every free agent.
Yeah. But there was no such bonanza this year. However, there was one particular story that took a rather hilarious progression, I guess we should say. Like, it's not actually like nothing really happened, but it's just funny. So Andy Martino,
completely one person's fault.
Yes. I mean, like, it's just this is funny because it's Andy Martino. So Andy Martino of SNY reported in early November that the Mets were not targeting Aaron Judge. He had been reporting this, you know, for like he also reported this in April when Judge turned down the Yankees contract extension offer. And he said, like, the Mets aren't going to swoop in and go after Judge. The Mets are not interested in Judge. But the wording of his piece that he wrote in November about this matter was, shall we say, interesting. And I'm just going to read the wording of the piece because I think that the way he worded this is important. Talking to Mets people about this all through the year, the team in Queens sees Judge as a Yankee, uniquely tailored to be an icon in their uniform, stadium, and branding efforts. Owners Steve Cohen and Hal Steinbrenner enjoy a mutually respectful relationship, and do not expect to upend that with a high-profile bidding war. The only way people involved can see the Mets changing course and pursuing Judge would be if the Yankees somehow declared themselves totally out of the bidding. End quote. So this this prompted MLB to launch an investigation into whether the Mets and Yankees colluded to suppress Judge's free agent market,
which is against the CBA, to be clear.
Exactly. Now, to be fair, MLB concluded that there was no collusion, but it's hilarious that Martino just like did his usual like stenographer bullshit and got the text and just like typed all the quiet parts out loud and just like pressed publish and like didn't like think about what he was saying.
Like what the consequences could be?
Like, man, what? But that's not even the funny part of all of this. I mean, it was funny, but like, it gets funnier.
But also, so, you wonder if like any other reporter would have done that. Like, if any other reporter said no, like, off the record, or not even like, hey, we're really not going to go after Judge because of whatever, would another reporter have tweeted it out?
I don't know. And, like, it, like he wrote it in the state media. Like,
yes!
I remember specifically the Athletic article that when the news broke that MLB was doing an investigation into this, the Athletic article literally said a report on the Mets, like the Mets team, like TV station's website. And yes. I was like, LOL.
Like their official website.
Like
And the tweet never got taken down even after they said they were investigating.
No, no. And I mean, the article's still up. The tweet's still up. It's all still up. So this is where it gets even more hilarious. John Heyman, before MLB actually like concluded that there was no collusion, this was like a little bit before that, John Heyman wrote a piece about how collusion would be hard to prove. There was always like, I would have been shocked if this investigation had actually turned up anything like that was hard evidence, because in order to actually say that they colluded, you need like texts between the two owners. You need like actual evidence, right? Yeah,
texts, emails,
something. You need something. And they were never gonna find that. Because I mean, unless like Steve Cohen and Hal Steinbrenner are like really stupid, but I don't think that is the case.
Yeah, we need something specifically between the two of them saying, hey, I'm not signing Judge as a favor to you, basically.
Yeah, how about you? No? Okay, good.
Cool.
Cool. We're agreed. And it's worth noting too that while this was all going on, Aaron Judge was the subject of the investigation, but there have also been reports throughout this whole thing that the Yankees are not pursuing Jacob DeGrom either. So it's kind of going both ways here, right? So, but John Heyman wrote this piece about how collusion would be hard to prove because you'd need, like, there's a high barrier. You need evidence.
Oh, no, Martino did say the Yankees asked for the medicals of Jacob DeGrom.
Right.
So sure, that to me was like, no, see, we're not really colluding.
Yeah, whatever.
like,
but
I thought that was just like a show, all for
it was,
show.
Yeah, it was. But then there was like, so then John Heyman, you know, writes this article and tweets it out. And then Andy Martino quote tweets John Heyman and says, quote, this is a pitch perfect analysis by John. No one ever reported or alleged contact between the owners. And in the least surprising development of the offseason, MLB found nothing. I literally, my jaw dropped to the floor when I saw this tweet. The audacity of this man. My no one ever reported or alleged contact between the owner's shirt has people asking a lot of questions about my shirt. Like, and the fact that he just doesn't even acknowledge that it was him that wrote the initial article that launched this entire investigation? Are you serious, man?
Like, it's completely delusional.
This is just like this is slimy stuff. This is like the most slimy, disingenuous bullshit. It's literally the Trump no collusion tweet. Like, that's literally what it is at this point. Like, Andy Martino is Donald Trump, like, tweeting no collusion, no collusion, in all caps. Like, oh my God.
Like, is he daft or is he just slimy?
No, I think he's slimy. I think he's very, very slimy. Like, he knows exactly what he's doing. Yeah. Like, yes, of course, Andy, we know that you didn't write in your article that Hal Steinbrenner and Steve Cohen are texting.
Yeah,
but you basically implied it.
Yeah,
like you caused an investigation to happen.
Yeah, dude, it started with you.
Like, my man.
And your bad reporting.
Oh, it like nothing. Obviously, this is like a non-story, really. I mean, like, listen, are the Mets and the Yankees colluding? Quite possibly. Probably. Is there proof that they are? No. So, like, there's nothing MLB can actually do about it. But and like it is kind of
still going to get paid at the end of the day. Somebody's going to pay our judge, so it's not really going to affect.
And
him.
It's probably going to be the Yankees. But yeah. Like, it is infuriating from a Mets fan perspective that, like, you know, to read like the reason that the Mets are not pursuing Aaron Judge is because Steve Cohen and Hal Steinbrenner enjoy a mutually respectful relationship. Like, oh my God, stop. I know. Like, I mean, like,
this is where we are in the off season, like bullshit stories like this that like probably wouldn't get as much traction if there was literally anything else going on.
But this is just like, this is like extremely, like, I don't know, like, this is like the funniest thing in a while to happen Mets wise like, and it's not even like lol Mets, it's just like, it's like lol Andy Martino, like,
yes. Like I say, the Mets actually did nothing wrong here. Maybe Steve Cohen did, but like,
I don't know, like, I guess the most wrong thing they did was text their favorite reporter about it.
Yeah.
And he failed to do journalism properly.
I was going to say, like, next time, just choose your words more carefully, Mets, or choose who you're blabbing to, Mets. Because clearly he can't keep a secret.
Yeah, like, he's not, and he, like, he just, like, didn't choose to think about this or do any further investigating at all about it. He just like got a text and tweeted it out, and that's like what, and now that here's where we are.
There was no journalism involved there whatsoever.
There was no journalism and there was no collusion. No collusion.
No collusion. No
journalism. No collusion.
But at the same time, don't the Wilpons still own SNY? Like, come on, Cohen. It's time to, like, clean house and, you know.
Yeah, I know. I know, right?
Like, revamp SNY.
I was going to say this is really Wilponian, but I guess that's why. Like, it is literally Wilponian because this is, like, SNY stuff.
Yes. So, of course, their fingerprints are still on this. Well, I know they're like probably not involved at all, but still, like, he's your employee.
Yeah, I just, man, that was just like, again, like, it's not actually a substantive story in the sense that it's like not like, it doesn't affect anything from the Mets perspective as far as like what their roster looks like, their offseason moves or anything like that. But it's just like a very funny story, a very funny, like, weird Mets like media landscape story.
Yeah, it's like, again, like with baseball journalism, can we like get actual journalists, please?
Yeah, I would like that
instead of people who just repeat what management tells them to say.
Also, I'd recommend very strongly that the rich billionaire owners don't collude.
Yes. Like, the this, like, we can laugh about it, but it was a symptom of larger problems. A, yeah. Baseball journalism, and B, collusion.
Yeah, like, I would recommend not doing that.
Yeah.
And this is an instance of, like, they had no actual hard evidence, but it, like, quacked, like, collusion and walked, like, collusion.
Yeah. And then you also wonder, like, how many of these other, like, backhanded deals happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes you think.
It does.
Really makes you think.
It does. Like, I don't know. Like, could the Mets tell the Braves, hey, we don't want you going after Jacob DeGrom? And the Braves, like, could that have happened? Because then the Braves said, we're not going after him.
And then the Braves' supposed interest in Jacob DeGrom suddenly vanishes into thin air.
Yeah. I mean, there's, I just made that up, like, there's no evidence whatsoever, but it makes you wonder.
Yeah, I don't know, like, a lot of these things, like, you know, when it comes to like teams like, and we talked about this a little bit last time, when it comes to teams like saying they're interested in a player, or like tweets from reporters or from certain sources saying that teams are interested in a player, like there's many reasons why that could be and then suddenly not be, that aren't collusion and have to do with like, they're still like kind of playing games, but it's like in an above board sort of way. Like
negotiating tactics.
Yeah. It's like the agent like leaking certain things to make it seem like the player's market is like very robust or whatever, or a team making it look like making it look like they're interested in a certain other player. So that player B, who they're actually interested in, they can be like, look, if we don't sign you, we're just going to sign player A. Like there's like a lot of like, that's why you can't like always trust these like reports that come out, because like someone is strategically leaking that usually.
Yeah. If they want to up their offer or something, like they use the media to get what they want.
Yeah. But meanwhile, we'll talk about a couple of those reports because we have to. Nothing about the Mets, aside from the Edwin Diaz deal, which happened very quickly, is like really even close to imminent at this stage, at least as far as like major free agents are concerned. But there's a few tidbits here and there that you can make of what you will. The Mets have been connected to Justin Verlander, but are reportedly more focused on Jacob deGrom now. But there's also been noise about Carlos Rodon and that they're going to meet with him. I think that it seems very clear that they really, really want to land one of those three top pitchers.
And
they're
going like to
figure out who they can get.
Yeah, their only competition is the Rangers for some reason.
The Rangers, like, so the Rangers, after initially reports came out that the Rangers were interested in Jacob deGrom, the latest reports from the Rangers are not necessarily coming from the Rangers, but the latest reports about the Rangers say that they are, quote, more confident that they can sign Carlos Rodon than they can sign Jacob deGrom. I mean, I don't know if that's true. I don't know. We don't know if that's a tactic on like on the agent's part or the team's part or whatever. But that is what the reports are saying.
Basically nobody knows anything until somebody actually signs. Well, because then I think even Marquino was like, ooh, there's a mystery team for Jacob deGrom.
Yeah, there's also a mystery team. The Dodgers met with Verlander. Because again, like the Rangers are reportedly in on these pitchers. And so they might be one of the Mets competition, but like the Dodgers are always competition for any free agent at the high end of the market because they're the Dodgers. So the Dodgers can just swoop in and you know, take any player at any time.
And do whatever they want, basically.
Yep. So that's always a possibility too. But I think that like it's clear that the Mets want one of those three top pitchers, and they kind of have to land one of those three top pitchers because otherwise their rotation becomes significantly worse.
Can they land two of those pitchers?
I mean, that'd be great. I don't expect it.
I don't either.
but that would make their rotation suddenly very good. But I don't know. We'll see.
I would love Jake and Rondon. I wanted Rondon last year.
Yeah. He'd be really good. Rodon would be a really good ad. He's injury prone, but yeah. DeGrom and Verlander are in their 30s. Verlander's almost 40. So yeah, like, there's that. And Scherzer is, you know, no spring chicken either. So the Mets open themselves up to risk by signing all these old dudes too.
Yeah. See, that's my problem. Like, yeah, I get Verlander just won the Cy Young, but I really don't want Verlander. He's always pushing 40 at this point. Scherzer's no spring chicken. You would be counting on the two of them?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Verlander has been doing this forever. And he just keeps doing it. And you kind of feel like he might be indestructible, but I don't know. Everyone's mortal. So
yeah, I just don't think that's a solid enough plan. I'm sorry.
It is a gamble. But there's like there's not much Like, it's not like there's that many hotshot free agents that are in their 20s available.
No, yeah, like, I get that, but you could go a little younger in Rondon.
Yeah, you could, they could.
Or even bring back Ty.
Yeah, they could. They seem not interested in that because they didn't even give him the qualifying offer.
Oh, they were linked to Jameson Taillon too.
Yes, they were. That's true.
So, and he wouldn't be bad.
Yeah, and he's a little younger.
Yeah, I think he just turned 30.
Yes, I think that's correct.
So, like, if he's, like, your 3 or 4, like, he would probably be your Taiwan Walker replacement.
Yeah, more or less. So, I'm looking up his birthday because he's 31.
Okay. I
think he just turned 31.
And I feel like he would be...
Yeah, his birthday was November 18th, so he was
okay. 31. And he would probably be better because I feel like he was victimized by Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, possibly.
I think he has a chance to get better if he signs with the Mets.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, I would be fine with, like, Jake Rondon and Taillon.
That'd be good. Yeah. That'd be great. I don't think that's going to happen.
Or was it Senga?
Kodai Senga. Yeah. I mean, there's no movement on that as far as I know. There's no, like, developments that are new from last time we recorded. Last time we recorded, both the Mets and Yankees had interest in him, and I think that remains the case.
And there's also a bunch of other teams too.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I think he's gonna get paid. Like, I don't think he's gonna be, like, some sort of cheap alternative.
No.
He's gonna get paid. So we'll see. But if they can land, like, one of these top three guys, Verlander, DeGrom, and Rodon, and also get Senga, that'd be great. But we'll see what happens.
Also, I know this was a long time ago and it proves nothing, but my former boss is from Detroit and is a really big Tigers fan. And they already tried the Scherzer-Verlander experiment and they failed.
Yeah, well, that's the Tigers. No offense to your former boss and my current boss, who is from Michigan.
They had Scherzer, Verlander, David Price, Porcello, and prime Miguel Cabrera, and still did not win.
Yep, it's kind of like the Angels with Trout and Ohtani.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's, like, her biggest regret is that they didn't win with that group. I was like, well, welcome to the club, because we Met fans also have a lot of regrets.
Yeah, we didn't win with the five aces because the five aces were never in the rotation at the same time, really.
Nope. Yeah, I think, like.
It was like one turn through.
Yeah, maybe I think two. It was that one glorious week and that was it.
That was it.
Hey, you've got all kinds of people yelling at you about sales, Black Friday, and Cyber Week these days. So I'll keep this short. Get the lowest prices of the season on an annual subscription to New York Magazine, now through November 30th. Prices start at $8 for a monthly digital subscription and top out at $45 for a year of print and digital access. Give yourself the gift of Vulture, The Cut, Intelligencer, and all your favorite New York Magazine brands for up to 75% off until the end of the month. Go to nymag.com/holiday by November 30th, and you will get the best deal of the year.
Other, like, Mets-related rumors. So Jose Abreu signed with the Astros, which is obviously not a Mets thing, but it's relevant to the Mets because he had been seen as a potential fit for the Mets at DH, but the rumor that, or the report that came out of Jose Abreu signing, was that, like, he had been seen as a fit for the Mets, but the Mets are filling that role instead, quote, internally.
I don't know how. I really don't know.
That's not a great thing to hear.
No, that was their one weakness last year, and you still don't have any more options.
Because, like, so sure, they picked up Vogelbach's option. Vogelbach is cheap. I'm fine with that.
Yeah,
and, like,
fine.
You know, he's the long side of the platoon. Sure, whatever. Run that back, I guess. But, like, they struggled to find a platoon partner for him all year. Darren Ruff was obviously an abject disaster. And I am scared that they are going to roster literally Darren Ruff again. And that is that cannot happen.
Please, Allison, I can't go through that again.
I can't do more Darren Ruff. Please, no more Darren Ruff. I think the Mets think he's good. They traded like four players for him. I think the Mets like think he's good and are going to do their Mets thing where they're like, well, we traded four players for him. So we've got to.
No.
I'm very scared of that.
I'm going to be like shaking in the corner now. No.
Just emotionally prepare yourself for Darren.
Like, he needs to go to like just retire or go back to the KBO where he was like a year ago or 2 years ago.
But I think that the Mets, and then like, so if they don't roster Darren Ruff, then like the other options are like Vientos, who looked clearly overmatched against major league pitching last year. Brett Beatty, who might be good, but we don't know. And like, he doesn't really have enough of enough major league experience to know if he's going to be good. And plus, like, we don't know if his bat alone is like enough to be like a viable DH.
Yeah.
And like, or like they carry three catchers and DH Francisco Alvarez, which is like, I think that's silly. I don't think they should do that.
No,
but I think they might. I think they legit might carry three catchers because they can't. I think they're going to try to trade James McCann, but they literally can't.
No, nobody's going to take him. You have to non-tender him.
You'd have to like, yeah, you'd have to cut him. Yeah. But I don't think they're going to. He makes too much money.
I mean,
because here's the thing. Like, I know that like Robinson Cano, we talked about this at the time that it happened. Robinson Cano was the big test to see if the Cohen regime would eat sunk costs, because the Wilpons never did that.
Yeah.
Like they would pour money into a player and then he would play even if he was awful because he makes money. Cohen proved that he is willing to eat sunk costs, but I think that McCann is different because he can still provide utility as a catcher. Like, he is decent at catching.
Yeah.
And I think that they see that as a reason to keep him around. He makes a lot of money and he can still provide some value catching. Whereas Robinson Cano had no value offensively or defensively.
I mean, I can buy that. If you don't have Darren Ruff as your DH, if you bring in more offensive firepower, you can deal with McCann as your catcher. You can't have McCann and Ruff in a lineup together. You can't.
No.
We saw it at the end of the year. We saw what happened in September when they couldn't score runs.
Or even Tomas Nito and Darren Ruff. I mean, Tomas Nito provides much more defensive value than even James McCann, who's solid, but Tomas Nito is like one of the best defensive catchers in the league. Yeah. So like, you put up with his like 60 WRC plus or whatever. But James McCann should not have a 60 WRC plus. Like, that should not be a thing. And yet I don't think that they're going to roster three catchers and Darren Ruff. That would be kind of ridiculous to do.
And wasting a roster spot.
But they might do one or the other of those things. I don't think either one is a particularly good solution.
No. It was a glaring weakness that we all saw and then got proven after the trade deadline. And then that's their plan again. Like, it failed during last offseason. Then it failed again after the trade deadline. So now you think it's going to work out this third time?
Yeah. I don't know.
When you still clearly need a DH?
They could have had JT Realmuto this whole time. It wouldn't be a problem.
Or even if they just signed like Schwarber or something.
Yeah, well, that would have been nice. Like a real DH, yeah.
Yeah, like a real bat.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they might have some other thing up their sleeve for this, but talking about filling that role internally is not ideal.
Red flag.
That's a red flag.
Danger.
On the, I guess, more positive side, there are reports that the Mets are interested in bringing back Adam Ottavino, and that a reunion with Seth Lugo is, quote, less likely, which makes sense, I guess. Because I think, like, there were rumors, like, Seth Lugo is actually generating interest as a starter, and he has made it no secret throughout his Mets tenure that he would prefer to be a starting pitcher. It's just that, like, he was not as effective with the Mets as a starting pitcher as he was as a relief pitcher, so he settled into the relief role. But that he, like, there were teams who were reportedly interested in Seth Lugo as a starter, which, good for him. He will most definitely leave and be a starting pitcher then if he gets a contract where he can even compete for, like, a rotation spot. But well, yeah, Adam Ottavino,
UCL tear too.
Yeah, he still has a partial, like, UCL tear that's, like, kind of a ticking time bomb. So,
yeah, good luck, Seth.
Even though I enjoyed his contributions to the Mets a great deal, I think that them parting ways is probably the best. Yeah. But bringing back Ottavino is, I think, a really good idea. I mean, he was really good last year. He was good.
I mean, I don't think, like, all of June, he only gave up one run, and that was in his very last appearance in June, like, at, like, the end of June. Like, he was held, like, he didn't give up a run for an entire month.
Like, I don't know where you're going to, I know he's, like, you know, again,
he's pushing 42.
Like, also, 30. Yeah, like, I don't know, like, how many old guys you can collect, but I don't know where else you're going to get, like, 2 point whatever ERA he did, like,
2.05,
like, 2 ERA production out of a reliever for any cheaper than Adam Ottavino. Like, it's just, you're not gonna, there's no way to get that.
For Edwin Diaz, he was their best reliever
by a lot.
Yeah,
like, by a fairly significant margin. Yes,
and again, the relief market is not that great.
Yeah. Which is why you need to develop guys.
Like, I mean, you want Corey Knebel or Will Smith, or, like, you have options, but are they as good as Adam Ottavino?
I would like Adam Ottavino back.
Yeah. And then they did shade for Jeff Brigham, who's decent.
Yeah. So the Mets have done some moves on the fringes that that are good, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Mets have made a few moves on the margin since we last recorded, mostly to bolster their pitching depth, both starting pitching and relief pitching. They acquired Eliseo Hernandez and Jeff Brigham from the Marlins for a prospect and cash considerations. And that was a good move, I thought. Eliseo Hernandez is not very good, but he's, like, he has potential. Like, he has good stuff and he shows flashes. Like, we've seen it. He's pitched against the Mets. And, like, he looks like he could be good. He gives up way too many homers, which is concerning when you pitch in Marlins Park, the most cavernous ballpark in the big leagues.
Yeah.
But if they can fix something, like, I don't know, like, if they can fix something with him and make it so he gives up, like, even, you know, like,
less
30% less homers than he does now, he sort of becomes, like, a fifth starter then, like, a viable actual fifth starter. So I think that that's good to have. Like, you're kind of, like, plugging him in the sort of, like, Joey Lucchese, like, that sort of tier of, like, maybe they can contribute and make spot starts here and there when there's injuries, they can fill in
for a doubleheader.
It won't be a disaster because you have, like, at least a major league caliber pitcher. And you can avoid, like, you know, the Sapucki start. I mean, I know Sapucki's not on the team anymore, but you can avoid, like, having that happen again. More Jose Budo content.
But so
that was good.
Is what's worse now, having Sapucki on the team or having Darren Ruff on the team?
Sapucki, probably, just because, like, I don't know, like, Darren Ruff,
I guess,
like,
he could cost you more.
Yeah, Sapucki can do more damage because he can, like, literally cost you a game by himself, whereas Darren Ruff can't really
that.
That's
true.
But yeah, so they also acquired Jeff Brigham in that trade. Good, like, again, a reliever that I think has options, so you can send up and down. The
you
Mets
think he's
also,
like, a 3.5 something ERA. Like, he's not bad.
Yeah, he's fine. He's good. So that's good. The Mets have that. That's good. And they have, this isn't anybody they acquired this year, but remember they have John Curtis coming back from Tommy John surgery. They acquired him last offseason, knowing that he would miss the entire 2022 season, but he will be in theory ready to go. And he is another, you know, optionable reliever that you have on tap. So the Mets are like acquiring these guys. They also picked up a couple of relievers off of waivers, Steven Ridings from the Yankees and William Woods from the Braves. These are like flyers that they're taking. And like, that's the type of thing that like good teams do to fill out their depth, especially teams like the Mets, who, you know, as we've established many times on this podcast, can't develop their own relief pitchers. So they have to go get other relief pitchers and hope that they can tweak them and make them into something useful. William Woods is an interesting guy. He was a riser in the Braves system, and he was their 25th best prospect even now, and would have been, I think, much higher on their list. Now, I'm not a prospect evaluator, but I think he would have been much higher on their list if not for the fact that he's been so, so injured the past couple of seasons. Last year, he made his major league debut, basically like pitched once, got sent back down, and then immediately injured himself, like, and not, but not arm problems. He had like an ankle injury, but it cost him like 3 months. And so like, he's just hasn't pitched enough in the past couple of years, but he's like, he throws really hard. He's one of those guys who throw like fastball slider guy who throws really hard, who might be a guy. So we'll see. And Steven Ridings, also intriguing guy. I know a little less about him, but you know, they're taking flyers, and that's good. Obviously, they need to be doing more than that, but these are the types of moves to bolster your depth that they should be doing. So they have been doing that.
And that they desperately need to.
Yeah. Yeah, they need to be doing that, because the current bullpen as constructed is like Edwin Diaz, Drew Smith, eighth inning guy, Steven Nogosic, John Curtis, and like
bring them.
That's like your bullpen, and like maybe like one of these waiver guys, like that is your bullpen right now. Bryce Montes de Oca, maybe. That's who's in your bullpen right now.
I dream one day of the Mets having a good bullpen.
They kind of did last year. Their bullpen was okay.
It was outside of, I mean, it was always an adventure with Joelly has gone to the Red Sox now.
No, yes. I wish Joelly the best. I hope he has more success with the Red Sox than he did with the Mets. He was good at the end of the season.
He was.
Found a stride at the end, but the early season was really rough.
Like he started off strong, then like kind of got a little shaky, and then like picked up steam again. So it was just always an adventure with him.
Yeah. And the Mets continue to have no left-handed options.
Unless they put like Peterson or Lucchese in there.
In the bullpen. Lucchese, I do not think is a viable. I mean, like he's a viable like swingman and like Trevor Williams type. Like that's fine. But
yeah,
I do not think they are using Joey Lucchese to air it out for an inning. That's not what Joey Lucchese
but
is for.
But didn't they try and he wasn't happy? Rojas put him in the bullpen, and he
was always pitching multiple innings when he went in relief, and he was really bad when he was a reliever. I think his like reliever splits were starter versus reliever splits were like pretty stark.
Yeah, because he did not want to be coming out of the bullpen.
But yeah, you do not want Joey Lucchese seventh inning guy. That's not a thing. Or like Joey Lucchese Loogie. That's not a thing you want.
The churv coming at you.
Churv. No, we want him to be the starting pitching depth. We do not want the Loogie to be Joey Lucchese. It's not a thing.
I know, it'd be kind of fun, like if coming out to like the Sopranos theme, and then you have Narco right behind him. How fun would that be?
That would be pretty badass, not gonna lie. But
it's just the
alas, it is never to be. The other piece of Mets news is not related to any players, but they've had a bit of a coaching staff shakeup. So the Mets promoted hitting coach Eric Chavez to bench coach. And that is because they were nervous some team was going to poach him to be their bench coach or even their manager. So
they poached him from the Yankees last year.
Yes, they did. Yes. And he was like, he was going to be, what was it? He was like interviewed to be the Angels manager.
Maybe.
He's gotten managerial interviews before, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, the Mets like did not want some other team to poach him, and so they promoted him to bench coach. The interesting part of this is that Glenn Sherlock, who used to be the bench coach, is now like coaching the catchers, which feels like a pretty significant demotion for Glenn Sherlock. Yeah. Like, I don't know, like, why he was kind of willing to take that. I guess, like, I don't know, he's older, like, he's probably not like looking to rise anymore in the ranks or like take a managerial position somewhere. So he's just like, and he's happy doing what he's doing. So he's like, yeah, sure, whatever.
Yeah, like coach, maybe just like stick me wherever, I don't care.
I loved the article about it though, because you could tell that like it was coming from like Mets people, because like the sentence about Glenn Sherlock was like, he's gonna coach the catchers and come up with strategies to control the running game, which the Mets see is vital to their success. I was like, they're talking really up this boring, like niche job they invented for Glenn Sherlock as to not spurn him.
Yeah, like, see, look at how vital he is to our team. He's very important. Value him.
He's very important. And Jeremy Barnes will now be the hitting coach. I think I saw a report after I did the show notes earlier this morning that their bullpen coach is not going to be back. The Mets bullpen coach. I thought I saw that.
Who was their bullpen coach?
Yeah, I'm like embarrassingly trying to find it now.
Because it wasn't Bonus, right? Bonus has been gone for a while, hasn't he?
Yeah, I'm trying. Craig Bjornson won't be returning as Mets bullpen coach. Team officials, with pitching coach Jeremy Hefner taking the lead role, will begin interviewing potential replacements this week. Mets would like new hire to be almost like an assistant pitching coach as much as bullpen. So, yeah, Jeremy Hefner is going to look to hire like a new kind of right-hand man. So that is a vacancy that will have to be filled. So there's some shuffling going on in the coaching staff, but
just whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, Eric Chavez deserves this promotion. Like, he's done a really good job. And it seems like Jeremy Hefner is like the constant through all of this. I mean, I think that Buck likes him, and I think that the pitchers like him. So,
yeah. And the organization seems to like him, because he was rising. When he was with the Twins, he seemed to be like rising through the ranks with the Twins. So he definitely seems to be, you know, a hot commodity, or at least, you know, respected around baseball. So,
yeah. And you can't really argue with the results. So,
no, I mean, people are getting on like, oh, their three biggest pitchers all failed when they need them the most. It's like a cliff. Okay, yeah, sure. Yeah, they weren't great against the Braves and Padres, but it was two games.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what about the rest of the year?
And, like, you know.
And I'm still convinced Scherzer was compromised, too.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it's pretty obvious. But, like, you know, their star pitchers coming up small in these key games, like, that's not the pitching coach. Like,
no,
Jacob DeGrom and Max Scherzer are like pretty well seasoned at this point. They're not like, not to say that like Hefner's not helping them with anything or like doing anything with them.
Yeah, like if something mechanically is off that they didn't realize, he could probably point it out for them.
But like Max Scherzer sucking in a big game is not Jeremy Hefner's fault. Like, that's that's not a thing. But yeah, that's basically the state of the Mets right now. We're in kind of a holding pattern, obviously.
Like, well, the Winter Meetings are what, this weekend?
Yes. Right? Yeah. So there's not a lot happening around baseball right now, like free agency wise. The winter meetings begin on Sunday, and they run through like Wednesday of next week. So that's when I think we'll start to see some real action. Usually at least one or two or a few big signings come out of the winter meetings. It's not everybody signs at the winter meetings, but at least like the proverbial ice is broken at the winter meetings. Usually I think my prediction is that the first like big, I mean, I guess unless you count, like, I guess you can't count Edwin Diaz as the first big signing, because like he technically was never actually a free agent, because the Mets like re-signed him before he even became like a free agent and used their like exclusive bargaining period right after the, like before the season even really ended. So I think that Verlander is going to be the first to sign, like the first big one to sign. That's my prediction. We'll based just on vibes and not actual evidence.
I think Martino predicted like Judge would sign over the winter meetings, but again, take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah, I don't know. So like so far, really, the only things that have happened are that, like we mentioned, Jose Abreu signed with the Astros. I think it was like 3 years, $80 million or something like that. Right. And the White Sox signed Mike Clevinger. That did happen.
Which was a really bad look for the White Sox if they let Abreu go and sign Clevinger.
Yeah, I know. I have to find the tweet.
Yeah, the Reinsdorf tweet.
Jerry Reinsdorf, his statement that he tweeted. Yeah. Statement on behalf of Jerry Reinsdorf, White Sox chairman, on Jose Abreu. It was my fervent hope that Jose would never wear another uniform, as I told him many times throughout the years. Unfortunately, hope is not always translated into reality. It's like, geez, Jerry. I wonder what, if only you could have done something.
Yeah, gee, I wonder who's in charge of that.
Yeah, like, it's just like, I really hoped that he would sign with us. It's like, yeah, like, you're the one controlling that.
He very easily could have signed with you.
Like, my brother in Christ, you could have just paid the man.
Like, you know, you're the one writing the checks, right?
Like, dude, what? Loved that. And then they just went and signed Mike Clevinger and said that's kind of anticlimactic. You know, I mean, they needed pitching, so yeah. Sure, whatever. They probably needed a better pitcher than Mike Clevinger, but sure, whatever. I can't, you know, I'm in no position to talk considering the Mets have to sign like three pitchers.
I follow a lot of folks from White Sox Twitter, and it's such a shame what's happened to that organization.
Yeah, I saw a tweet that was like, what is even the point of the
White Sox? Yeah, like, they were so fun a couple of years ago. The vibes were good.
And then they hired Tony La Russa.
Yeah, and just killed everything. And
killed all the good vibes. Yep, like, the good vibes instantly gone.
And it seems like he lost the clubhouse multiple times.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it's like, now you're letting your stars go. You're not bothering to compete. Like, they could have very easily competed for that division last year if they tried a little harder.
Yeah, the division was kind of garbo, so.
Yeah, like, if they had signed a couple of free agents, if they hadn't hired Tony La Russa.
Yeah. You know, I mean, well, La Russa's not going to be their manager anymore, so.
Yeah, but I don't know. It just seems, I feel bad for White Sox fans.
Yeah, it is kind of a sorry. The organization's in a sad place.
And it happened so fast, too, because it seemed like they were this, like, up-and-coming team. They were going to be fun. They were going to be good for a while. And then they just did a complete 180.
Speaking of organizations that are in a sad place, one of the only other free agent signings was that Carlos Santana signed a 1-year deal with the Pirates. Oh, so that they did that. Good for them.
Yeah. Like, you go, Pirates. You do something.
You do a thing. You tried. Yeah. The Pirates. And it's just like, and now I'm just thinking to myself, like, what cash deal will the Mets make with the Pirates this year? It seems to be like an annual thing.
I know.
So
I almost fell off my chair a couple years ago when I went to the Pirates game and they bought Anthony Banda, and I was like, oh my god,
it's Anthony Banda. Yeah, like what, like what reliever are we going to trade them this year? It was Anthony Banda, and then it was Colin Holderman. So are we going to end up trading them like Bryce Montestioka?
That's my bet.
Yeah, for something. We'll see. Stay tuned for Pirates related developments. But yeah, I
it's
mean,
like the annual trading for Kelly Johnson. This is the new trading for Kelly Johnson.
Yeah, it is. In NL East division news, we learned in the past like week or so that Bryce Harper underwent Tommy John surgery, which we always knew, like he had UCL damage. We knew this, and he was like playing through that.
And he couldn't throw, was only DHing. Yeah.
And I think that like there was always like, they always knew that he like needed, you know, like some sort of like whether he needed actual Tommy John or just like rehab was unclear. But he underwent Tommy John surgery. So now he's going to miss about half the season next season, which is a pretty big blow to the Phillies because obviously he's their best player. And the Phillies expect he'll be able to DH by the All-Star break and then play in the field again, like toward the end of the regular season. So
it's not as bad as what a pitcher gets it, but it's still
right. Still, you still need a functional elbow to like swing the bat.
And stuff. Yeah, it helps.
It helps. So that's a pretty big blow to them. They're probably, you know, factoring that into their offseason plans. I think that the Phillies' like biggest splash is going to be whatever shortstop they sign. I think they're going to be in on like Turner, Correa, like that tier of free agent for that
I don't see them for Turner or Swanson.
I think they might.
That's a lot of money to have tied up in Wheeler, Schwarber, Castellanos, Harper, Real Muto.
They almost won the World Series.
They
see it as like we need to invest in this team. I don't know. I wouldn't count them out. Like I'm nervous about them.
They definitely need a shortstop, but I don't know if they would pay that though, because like I said, they have a lot of money on the books.
We'll see. I think that this ratchets up their need to do that though. Yeah. Like they already needed, like it was already like a gaping hole that they were going to need to fill. And I think it becomes even more stark because like missing Bryce Harper's bat out of the lineup is a big deal for them. Like that's not good for them.
No. Yeah.
So we'll see what happens, but I think that they're going to be big players in the shortstop free agency market.
But I think they also need a closer too. Cause Knebel.
Oh, absolutely. They do. Yeah.
Knebel's gone.
And you know, he wasn't particularly good for them either.
No.
I mean, you know, they have Sir Anthony Dominguez, who, you know, did a good job for them. I don't know if they like think that he can be the closer, but even if they do think that, they need more than just him. And Zach Eflin's gone now. They had been using him sort of as like a, like he sort of became like their Seth Lugo.
Yeah.
Like fireman who can pitch multiple innings and like turned into kind of a like a bit of a bullpen hero. And he's going to get like, make no mistake, Zach Eflin is actually going to get, I think, quite the hefty contract. If you look at what relievers are getting across the league and like the availability of relievers, I think someone is going to pay Zach Eflin a fairly significant amount of money to like maybe be their setup man or something.
Yeah.
Maybe. I could see it.
Didn't they have Brad Hand for a while or did I make
yes,
that up?
Yes, yeah. They did. Yes. He was in their bullpen last year.
Yeah, but he's a whole new bullpen. Jeez.
He's a free agent again, I think.
Yeah, he is.
So, yep, the Phillies need a lot of relievers also, like the Mets.
I don't know much about like their pipeline, if they have anybody that could.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, I know that their top prospect is a pitcher, but a starting pitcher.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know what they've got coming down the pike necessarily. So It'll be interesting to see what they do.
Especially, yeah, like you said, they came so close.
Yeah. Like, you know, I think, like, it's the Braves are like NL East picture wise, like the Marlins continue to be like virtually a non-factor as far as like spending money on free agents. Who knows if they'll field like a good baseball team, because sometimes they just like are good randomly without
for 60 money. Games.
Yeah. Right. Ugh. In 60 game samples, the Marlins can be good. but I think that them being, you know, big players on major free agents is not a thing. The Nationals are actively tanking and continuing to do it. They actually signed like two guys today, but it was like Heimer Candelario and like, oh my God, I don't remember the other guy they signed.
Were they like invites to spring training?
Stone Garrett, that's who they signed. I was like, whoa. Nationals making moves.
The stove, it is hot.
Stone Garrett was non-tendered by the Diamondbacks, by the way. so that's the type of stuff the Nationals are doing. And will continue to do, probably. So then you have the Braves, who obviously are a very good baseball team, won the NL East. And did not, like, Dansby Swanson is the only notable departure from that team. So they will be good again. But unclear how much there'll be players in the free agent market. They made a noise about DeGrom a long time ago, but then, like, there was something about how, like, they don't want to spend over $20 million average annual value for, like, anybody ever, because they're the Braves and they, like, their whole business model is, like, locking up their homegrown players for $2. so if they can't do that, they're like not going to sign free agents for big money. Maybe, I don't know. And then you've got the Phillies and the Mets. The Mets are going to spend money. Who knows how much? And the Phillies, I think they're in a position where like, this is a team that they want to invest in. Like it's a good team that almost won that got to the World Series. Like you got to keep building on that. On that momentum that you have. So I think that they're gonna play.
The Mets certainly didn't in 2015. They're like, right, hey, we got there, it's okay. And then they just didn't invest in that team.
Right.
So I mean, maybe we shouldn't base it on the Mets being Metsy and the Wilpons owning the team, but not every team goes for it. Let's put it that way, after they've or just been to the World Series.
Yeah.
Or they just accept that we had a good team, so they should just be good.
Right. Like, if I'm a Phillies fan and the Phillies don't spend money this offseason, like, I'm pissed. Like, they should be spending money. They should get one of the best, they should get one of those top shortstops. Absolutely. They need to rebuild their entire bullpen. And obviously, they need to sign starting pitcher as well, because the Syndergaard departed. Eflin's gone, even though they started using Eflin in relief, but he's gone. They need.
Unless they're, like you said, are they going to give their prospect a shot?
Maybe. I don't know if he's ready. I don't know the status of him. I don't even remember his name.
I don't either.
I know. I'm like, I can picture him in my head, actually, what he looks like. He's like
Andrew Painter.
Yeah, Painter. He's
Micah Bell. That I was thinking of him too.
I mean, they have a few guys, actually.
Yeah,
but
yeah, it seems like both their top prospects are all pitchers.
Yeah. Anyhow. Yeah. The only other baseball news this week or the past couple of weeks is that a judge ruled twice against Trevor Bauer, which is very excellent news. Basically, the two rulings were Bauer has filed a bunch of defamation lawsuits, basically against his accuser and against all the media outlets and against anyone who said that he did the things. He filed defamation lawsuits against all of them. One of those was dismissed, which is the one against his accuser's former attorney. So that one was dismissed. And the other ruling was that his accuser's countersuit can continue. So she is countersued against him. And so the judge ruled that that countersuit could continue. So Trevor Bauer took two L's. Just putting it out there.
Yes.
Great. Great. We love to see it. I know that these are like not, you know, groundbreaking or like he's not going to jail or anything like that. But, you know, anytime Trevor Bauer takes an L, we'll be here to talk about it because we want to see that.
And also it just proves that even though the case was dismissed, that doesn't mean he's innocent.
Right.
Like there's still legal proceedings going on.
Yeah. And there will continue to be. He just wants to drag this out for as long as humanly possible because he's filed all these defamation lawsuits. And like a bunch of those are still going on. So like these things are continuing to happen. Like, yes, he luckily has like dropped out of the baseball public consciousness, which I think is a good thing. But we can't forget that these things are still happening. That this is not over. Especially for, you know, the victim, it is never over.
No.
And he is making her life miserable by suing everybody involved and continuing to let this drag out. So, you know, there it is.
Well, and was it 2 years he was suspended?
Yeah.
So technically after next season, he could theoretically come back.
He could. I've never been optimistic about this stuff because never underestimate like the ability of some team to be like, here's a cheap option for us. But I think in this case was so egregious. He's been out of baseball for so long. He's been so persona non grata at this point. I actually think that he's never going to pitch in the major leagues again, which is good.
Yeah. Let's hope.
I mean, I hope. Like, I don't know this, but that's my gut feeling on the matter. Like, I just think, and it's not all because of the great benevolence of baseball teams. Let's be real. The fact that he won't have pitched for 2 years, I think plays a pretty big role here. It's a combination of like, him being like no one wanting to touch that with a 10-foot pole and also him not having pitched for 2 years. Like it's not for teams. It's not worth the PR risk for a guy who hasn't pitched in 2 years and was only ever good, like for not that long.
Yeah. And because of sticky stuff.
And because of sticky stuff, basically. So,
yeah.
So I really don't think he pitches again. We'll see. I hope he doesn't.
No, I just want him to go away forever. Like, be fired into the sun and go away forever.
Yeah. I mean, part of these defamation lawsuits is him, like, clinging to relevancy and, like, grabbing at headlines and, like, anything people say about him is, like, good because they're talking about him, so. Which I guess we're contributing to that, but I like talking about when he takes L's, so
yes.
That makes me happy. So I figure I mentioned it. We're not gonna spend hours on this podcast analyzing it.
No,
but just warranted a mention, I think. But we will end the show this week, like we always do, with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about something that is making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. Linda Surovich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win is obviously Thanksgiving. We went to my aunt's house in Jersey, and it was the first time in 2 years the entire family was able to get together.
That's great.
My cousin had her baby during the pandemic, and then my cousin graduated college during the pandemic, so we did a drive-by celebration in 2020. And that was the only time I'd ever met Allie, like a little baby in a car seat, like driving by. That was the, and now like she was a little girl running around talking. I was like, who is this child?
Yeah, right.
Like kids just grow up so fast. And yeah, it was just incredible to see, you know, I was like, wait, I had to do a double take. And, you know, it was funny because we've been going to my aunt's house for so long, like my generation used to be the kids running around. So we were like, is this what we sounded like when we were running around this, like the house? And now like all the cousins' kids were running around. And so it's like, yeah, that was you. But you were doing the same thing. So yeah, just kind of, you know, the circle of life or time keeps going. So yeah, it was good. And then my mom does a smaller Thanksgiving with just the immediate family. So I had two Thanksgivings. I ate way too much. I saw the Bluey balloon. I'm so happy I got to see the Bluey balloon. I was so excited that Bluey was going to be a balloon. And then I actually got to see Bluey. So that was fun. And then our therapy dog at work was in the dog show afterwards.
Fantastic.
They didn't show him like being like shown or whatever, but like when they went through the lineup, we got to see him. So he made a cameo. It was overall just like a really, it was a really good day. I always love Thanksgiving, and you know, and then it does get overlooked by Christmas. And you know, I was already listening to Christmas music as soon as it was November, but still, I do appreciate Thanksgiving, and it's the one holiday that like everybody can celebrate and come together, and like it's like a typical American holiday. So it was nice finally and seeing everybody again. And apparently my aunt and uncle, their whole family, they're all really big Yankees fans. But now my cousin's son all of a sudden became a Mets fan.
Excellent. We brought one over.
Yeah, so I was like, Elaine, why is Declan a Mets fan? All of a sudden she goes, I don't know. I was like, all right, I'll take him to a game. She goes, good, because I'm not. So I was like, yes, we won Declan over. So him and Em were talking because Declan's favorite player is Pete Alonso. So that made my niece Emily very excited. Very
yes,
good.
They can bond over that.
Yeah, so I was like, yes, way to go, Declan. So yeah, overall, it was just a good day, good food. I beat my cousin in fantasy football. It was all good. And Bluey. And Drew in the dog show. Those are all my walk-off wins.
Yes. My walk-off wins are also multiple. And they're also kind of all like centered around just like having a very nice like Thanksgiving holiday. We went to Michael's mom's house for Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving's really big in Michael's family. We they always have like a big Thanksgiving. And this is the first time that I've gotten to participate in it since 2019 when we first started dating, because I was pre-COVID. And then in 2020, we didn't really have the like big Thanksgiving because like of COVID. And then in 2021, I was exposed to COVID like right. I didn't end up getting it at that time. But I was exposed to COVID like right before Thanksgiving. So we didn't go to the, I didn't go to the dinner. So this is the first time I've gotten to like do, Thanksgiving with Michael's family since 2019. So that was like really, really nice. And this year for the first time, my parents and my brother came as well. So we had like our first kind of like blended family Thanksgiving. It was huge. It was like 18 people. And it was really nice. So I had a nice time. Lovely dinner. Michael's mom never disappoints. She's a fantastic cook. And we had a really nice, nice Thanksgiving dinner too. Always like so much food, like three rounds of food. Like she does a whole breakfast spread too. It's insane.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm just like, Thanksgiving is when you like fast all day and you don't eat until dinner. That's the whole point. No. Not
start cooking
the days before.
Oh my gosh.
Like she preps the whole week. So we had a whole breakfast spread at like 10 a.m. like bagels, lox, cream cheese, eggs, bacon, like the whole deal, like pancakes, like all the side dishes, like everything, full breakfast spread at 10 a.m. So that's round one. And then like round two is the appetizer round, like the hors d'oeuvres, like at like, you know, in the afternoon while you're watching football. And then round three is the big dinner at dinner time. And then round four is dessert. No. I was really slowing down by the end. You have to, it's imperative to pace yourself, and I always fail. So yeah, it was really nice. And then, so my second walk-off win is that I went to, so this Thanksgiving weekend, the Sunday after Thanksgiving, I went to my first ever NFL game. I went to with Michael to see the Jets, and the Jets won. I have been filled in on every single bit of detail involving Zach Wilson and the drama of Zach Wilson. But Mike White came through for the Jets, they played the Bears.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And the Bears primary quarterback was also injured. So my first NFL game, it poured the whole time and I watched two backup quarterbacks play. But Mike White did a really good job and led the Jets to victory. And now Jets fans are all converted to Mike White. Like as you know, the next coming of Christ himself. So
all aboard the Mike White train.
They are all aboard the Mike White train, let me just tell you. And you know, if it wasn't for the fact that when I tell you it poured, it poured. I was like, I'm a delicate baseball fan in my sport. They cancel the game when this happens.
Shouldn't there be a delay?
Shouldn't there be a delay? A rain delay? Instead, I just sat there with a giant poncho over myself, like scowling. I was pretty miserable with the weather. I was very happy that the Jets won and it was an exciting game with like lots of action and like,
were you
Michael
able
was happy.
To cheer? Or was it just like,
I mean, like I did like my little, what? like my clapping didn't make any noise because I had gloves on that were soaked through, so it just like sad sloshes when I clapped. I was wet, like I had jumped in a pool, even though I had worn a poncho. It was just like, because it was windy at 1.2. Yeah. It was, at least it wasn't like super cold. Like it was cold enough where if you're wet, you're gonna be chilly. But it wasn't like, you know, 30 degrees and raining. It was like 50 degrees and raining.
Yeah.
But it was still not the best weather in the world.
No,
but
because I went to Target because I realized everybody had a stocking with me. So I was like, well, I need a stocking in my own house. So because I was decorating that Sunday. And yeah, I was driving to Target and it was, yeah, like pouring rain. Yep. So yeah, rained. I know exactly what kind of rain you were talking about,
because I'm just about as hard as it can rain without like thunderstorming. It was raining pretty hard for most of the game too.
Yeah, like I had the windshield wipers feeling the do 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 do.
Yeah,
do,
the
do,
like
do.
Fastest setting, yeah. Where they like they're
the
like
car
a blur.
Shakes, it's going back and forth.
Yep, it was raining a lot. So yeah, that was the bad part of it. But the good part of it is that the Jets won. And it was a good time. I enjoyed it.
Did you stay for the whole game?
Yes, we sure did. We
stayed
for the whole game. I went down into the concourse during halftime because I was like, I need to be dry. I need to warm up.
Did they have like heaters or anything? Like,
nope.
That's not fair.
The only time I could like get warm was when I would go to the bathroom.
Yeah, could you stand under the hand dryer and
just stand under the hand dryer like, please help,
dry off, help me.
And it was like, it was such a production to use the bathroom too, because like I had to like take my poncho off, take my coat off, my sopping wet coat, like peel all the layers. Oh, it was like ridiculous.
You're a bigger person than I am. I don't know if I would have gone.
It was like the only thing Michael wanted, and you know, like, and he bought the tickets, so I can't complain. I was like, we'll go. I was like, I'll go to an NFL game with you, but I'm not paying for it. Yeah. So I paid for the parking, which is not cheap.
No.
That was my consolation. I was like, you paid for these expensive tickets, I'll pay for the parking. That's fine.
What about food? Who bought the food?
I did, but okay. we took like turns because like I bought one beer and he bought the other. I don't remember. I bought the food though.
Okay. Now, what did you think of the stadium? Because when I went, I was like, the stadium cost $1 billion and it's like nothing.
It's a stadium.
Utilitarian looking. It's not.
Yeah,
nice.
It's tough because like, again, I have a sample size of one for NFL games. But like, to me, like one of the things about baseball that I enjoy is that all the parks are different.
Yeah.
And like with football, like all the stadiums kind of look the same. They're like big, giant bowls.
Yeah.
Like indiscriminate utilitarian bowls.
Like
it was a football stadium.
I don't know if because I went when it first opened. Like I went so long ago already. But I went to the bathroom. The game wasn't on the bathroom. Like the bathrooms weren't even like automated. And I was like, it's Citi Field. You listen to Howie while you're in the bathroom.
The game was on the radio in the bathroom.
Okay. So maybe they did some upgrades. I'm like, this stadium cost $1 billion and I can't even hear the action when I'm in the bathroom.
But like, I'm like, football is not a very good radio sport.
No,
and like,
not.
I don't know enough. Like, I don't watch enough football and like follow football enough to be able to like, when they're talking on the radio about what's happening, like, I can't follow what's going on. Like baseball is like a very good radio sport because it's kind of like has like a slower cadence to it. There's like, you know, like you have time to describe what's happening. Football is just like, he runs up, he throws it, he spins around, pile of dudes. And then that's like, that's what it is.
Or the, what is it? The shove time.
Yeah. Shove time has elapsed or whatever.
Yeah, for the strange planet, he shoved after shoving time was over.
Personal
There's
foul.
Laundry on the field.
Shoved after shoving time was over. So yeah, but I had a fun time. It was fun. Sorry, I'm cheating and taking a lot of time for walk-off wins this week, but you know, I got to celebrate my dubs. I've had a rough year. So like when I have good times, got to celebrate it. So, you know, I went to the NFL game with Michael. So, you know, the trade-off to that is that he has to put up with me during the World Cup, which
the other football.
Yes, that is my walk-off win, is that the World Cup is happening and the U.S. men's national team advanced to the round of 16 today. I love soccer. It's like I love soccer as much as I love baseball. It's just that there's not really like I get as excited about the U.S. women's national team as I get about the Mets, but I never really can get invested in the men because they suck most of the time and they're like really disappointing. And I don't have, even though I like love the game of soccer just as much as I love the game of baseball, I don't have like a club team that I support like most soccer fans do. Like most soccer fans have like either like a European club team that they love or like an MLS team that they love, but I just like never, I don't know. I like, there was a while when I was a kid that I was like really into, well, back then they were the Metro Stars and they were the New Jersey Metro Stars, mind you, because they played at MetLife, what is now MetLife Stadium, you know, the Meadowlands. They played at the Meadowlands and they were appropriately called the New Jersey Metro Stars. But then they changed their name to both like corporate branding and New York Red Bulls. And I was like, excuse me, did they move locations? I don't think they did. So like, I don't want to say that like killed my fandom because that's not really it. It's like, I also just like kind of like, MLS never stuck. Like I liked it a lot more when I was a kid and it just never stuck with me as an adult, even though I kept playing soccer and still loved it. It's just like, it never like grew root. My fandom never grew roots the way my Mets fandom did. So like, I'll pay attention to the Red Bulls when they're like in the playoffs, but I don't like live and die during MLS season. And it's also partially because like the MLS is not like, it's still not the best players in the world, you know, because like soccer in America is still growing as far as like the domestic league. It's not the elite league. And that's why a lot of Americans like root for Premier League teams, because that's where the best players are playing. That's the most fun. But even more fun is international competition, in my opinion. And that's when I get really fired up about soccer. But it only happens once every 4 years. I get into the Olympics, too, but it's not quite the same, because for soccer fans, like, the World Cup is it. That is the pinnacle. So it's just very like, well, there's nothing like the World Cup. It's just like the whole world's involved. It's just like so fun. I love it. And so, well, yeah, I just have loved just watching it.
Oh, this year, like all the scandals and
my God, I know.
This is like the most dramatic World Cup.
I know, like FIFA. I love the World Cup. I don't love FIFA.
No, FIFA's like, terrible.
You know, you love the Olympics. You don't love the IOC. The IOC. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, I love the World Cup. FIFA is a corrupt, terrible organization. And, you know, having this World Cup in Qatar comes with all sorts of problems of human rights abuses and issues with the regime. So it's mixed feelings for sure. It's not, it's tough because there are lots of people who rightly are calling to like called for boycotts of this World Cup. But like that was just like simply never going to happen. Like yeah. People were just never like, it's the most popular sporting event in the world. You were never going to get people to boycott that. Like, I'm sorry.
I was just saying there's probably like way too much money on the line.
Oh yeah. sure. Yes. but yeah, so like, it's been really fun. Like, I haven't had this much fun like watching a World Cup, at least a men's World Cup, since 2010, when I was there, when I went to the World Cup in South Africa in 2010.
Well, isn't it going to be in Jersey
next World Cup in 2026? It will be hosted. It will be jointly hosted. It's only, I think, like the second time that that's happened. It will be jointly hosted by three nations, by the United States, Canada, and Mexico. All three will host. And so there will be cities throughout the, you know, the continent, the North American continent, that will be host cities. And one of them is, the Meadowlands. So they're calling it New Jersey / New York. Because of course they are.
Well, I mean, the Jets and Giants kind of set the precedent there.
Exactly. So yeah, that is one of the host cities, along with Philadelphia is a host city in America. I forget the full list, but it's like eight cities in America and a few cities in Canada and Mexico. I was talking to Michael's family about this during Thanksgiving, but like it's interesting because the host nation always gets an automatic bid to the World Cup.
Oh.
All the other nations have to qualify through their regional tournaments. In the United States case, that's CONCACAF. Last World Cup, the United States did not qualify. so they did not play in the most recent World Cup before this one. Yeah, and CONCACAF is like Canada, Mexico, United States, Latin America. And the European region, notoriously difficult to qualify out of because like Europe is very good at soccer.
Yeah.
And then like, you know, the like Asia and the Middle East have their own like qualifier. Africa has its own qualifier. But the host nation gets an automatic bid. And it's interesting because like, does that mean that the US, Canada and Mexico will all get automatic bids? Which would be weird because that's basically like all the CONCACAF slots, like only three. I think there are four teams from the CONCACAF in this World Cup. It's the United States, Mexico, Canada and Costa Rica who were in this World Cup. And Costa Rica only qualified because they basically like played a play-in game. There were like a couple of like qualifying slots that were like you play in a playoff. It's kind of like those play-in games for the NCAA for the March Madness tournament.
Okay. Yeah.
Where they like play in to get that final slot. They have to like play each other and the winner of that game gets that slot. So Costa Rica only qualified because they beat, I forget who they played in their play-in game, but they played a play-in game to qualify. So those are only four teams from the CONCACAF in this World Cup. So if like next World Cup, the three CONCACAF teams have the automatic bid, like, is there going to be no other CONCACAF team? Like, are they not going to have CONCACAF qualifying? I don't know enough about, like, I know, like, nominally how this works, but I don't know how they're going to handle that exactly. So that'll be interesting. But yeah, the World Cup is very fun. I have enjoyed myself a great deal. I usually don't get this invested in the men. I only get invested in the women. But the men have at least advanced to the round of 16, and they play on Saturday against the Netherlands and are probably going to get stomped, but I'm going to watch anyway and get very excited about it.
So is it like elimination now?
Yes. Oh. Now it's elimination. So all the Americans were complaining about ties. There won't be ties anymore, people. There's not going to be ties now. The group stage is over. Eliminated. So now if it's tied at the end of regulation, they will play overtime. And if it remains tied at the end of, they play, like, I think a lot of sports work this way. Like they play, like, you know, two overtime periods with another kind of like little halftime in between. And if it remains tied after that, then they will do penalty kicks, to determine the winner, which is like kind of like the shootout in hockey.
Yeah. Similar. Situation. Although they get rid of the shootout in the playoffs, so you just keep going.
Wow. Yeah. See, people say that, like, that they should do that for soccer, and, like, in principle, I agree. Like, I'm a baseball fan, right? Like, I'm very pro, like, play until someone wins. I think that penalty kicks are a terrible way to decide a winner.
Because penalty kicks, because at least in a shootout, it's even. The goalie and the player have, well, they're. They both have an equal chance at either stopping the puck or scoring. But in soccer, it seems like if you guess wrong, you're done.
Oh, yeah. A penalty kick
is
essentially a free goal. It should be a free goal. Like, the chances of a goalie saving it are very low in soccer. Like, yeah. So it's almost like the penalty kick shootout is so much more mental than it is physical at that point. Like, it's all a mental game. If you miss a penalty kick, it's because either the goalie, like, guessed correctly and made a fantastic save, or you, like, you let the pressure get to you and you missed. And that's, like, you know, a professional player should not miss. Kind of like how, like, you know, basketball free throws. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're a professional basketball player, you should never miss a free throw. It's called free for a reason. Like, it's from a distance that any professional basketball player should make, but no basketball player shoots 100%. Most of them don't even come close. Most of them are like 80, like even the best ones are like 80 something percent because, like, you know, everyone's staring at you.
And making noise and, like,
noise. And so, like, that's kind of what soccer, like, penalties are like. It's like a free throw. I mean, I know the goalie's standing there, whereas in basketball, no one's, like, blocking the basket.
It's basically for decoration at that point.
Yeah, exactly. It's basically free. And so, like, it is, yeah. And it's a terrible way to decide the winner because, like, you know, there's no strategy or, like, athleticism or, like, superior, like, anything involved. Like, it's not like this team won on penalties, therefore they were the better team. Like, that's never the case, right? It's all luck at that point.
Yeah.
But it's like letting it be decided by a coin toss, basically. But, like, soccer, like, I think people who don't watch soccer regularly don't understand, like, how hard it is to keep play. Like, it's hard to play that game for 90 minutes. Do you know how in shape you have to be to play that for 90 minutes? Like, it is so much more running than any other sport besides literally running, besides literal track and field. Like, players run like professional players run like 5 miles a match or more. Like, it is so much running, and it is physically impossible for these players to play beyond, like, the 120 minutes of, like, overtime. It's just, like, you can't do it anymore at a certain point. Like, all the players would drop dead on the pitch. Like, you can't play soccer for that long. They have to do penalties at a certain point. Hockey, they can keep going partially because it's, like, a little less. I mean, it's more physical in other ways, in the sense of, like,
they do the line changes. They're not out there the entire time.
Exactly. Like, they sub the entire team out and they cycle in and out. They only play for a couple minutes at a time and then they get to rest. Soccer is not like that. Like, most of the players on the field have been playing the whole time. They make, like, you get 5 subs. Like, and that's the max. And most teams don't use their max. They only use their max when, like, guys get hurt and stuff. Like, it's grueling. You can't play that long. So, like, I know that penalties are like an objectively shitty way to decide like an elimination game in a world tournament, but like, what can you do? There's like no really, I haven't heard of a good alternative to it.
Yeah.
And it's crappy. But anyway, there will be no more ties.
Yeah. Didn't Germany win on like penalty kicks last time or like two something ago?
Yes, I believe that is what happened. I'm like trying to remember because I watched the World Cup last time, but like I didn't watch it too, like I wasn't paying too close attention because the United States did not qualify. So I was just like kind of casually watching it.
I feel like sometime either the last World Cup or the World Cup before that, I think somebody won on penalty kicks and it's like, oh. They won it all on a penalty kick.
Yeah, it's rough when it's decided by penalties.
Yeah.
But the World Cup has been super fun, and the group stage has been great because, like...
There were a lot of upsets, wasn't there?
Yeah, there were a lot of upsets, and, like, basically, if you're a soccer fan, this is the best time, because, soccer is on literally all day. You can just put it on in the background all day and just watch great soccer all day. It's awesome. I mean, like, the time difference makes it hard because the earliest games were at 5 a.m. so, like, those I mostly did not see. But, like, starting, there was, like, you know, on days where there was, like, a full slate of games, which was, like, you know, the past 2 weeks straight have basically all been like that. It's been, like, you know, you wake up at 8 a.m. for work, and it's, like, there's a game at 8. There's a game at 11. There's a game at 2. So it's basically like all day there's been soccer and it's been great.
You just put it on and leave it on.
Yep. That's what I've been doing on days I've been working from home. Literally, I put it on. I leave it on in the background all day and I mute it during meetings. And I've just had it on all day, every day. And it's been awesome. I've been in like heaven. Like, imagine if there's baseball like all day. Wouldn't that be great? That's what it's like.
With the World Baseball Classic or no?
I don't know. I don't know exactly what the schedule of the World Baseball Classic is going to be like, as far as like how many games per day they're going to be. I feel like early on there's probably going to be a lot.
Yeah, you would think. And they're playing exhibition games against the Mets.
Yeah. I can't wait for the World Baseball Classic.
It's going to be good.
World Cup. It's the same thing. It's very exciting. I think it's going to be super fun. I was looking at it, and the American team is not as good as the Dominican team, folks. Really? Let me just tell you. Oh, that Dominican team.
I keep seeing all these people going for Team USA. I'm like, oh, we're stacked. Oh, because now Harper probably can't play anymore.
No.
Damn it.
World Baseball. Let me, like, I am telling you, this roster is bananas. Like, Dominican. I saw a graphic with the entire roster on it. Why can't I find it? I just keep seeing that, like, Nelson Cruz is going to be the GM.
Oh, Adam Wainwright apparently is on Team USA now. That was just announced today. And Nestor Cortez is on Team USA.
I saw it on Twitter originally.
Well, the Czech Republic has a team. Way to go, Czech Republic. I think that's to play to get in.
Yeah, so this isn't the complete roster because this was tweeted a while ago. But this was the roster like in October, and it's like, you know, only more players have said they're going to do it. But this is the Dominican roster. Gary Sanchez at catcher, Vlad Guerrero Jr. at first base, Jose Ramirez at second base, Wander Franco at shortstop, Manny Machado at third base, Sandy Alcantara is the starting pitcher. Mm. Rafael Devers is the DH. Juan Soto is the right fielder. Oh. And Starling Marte is the left fielder.
No, Marte.
And Framber Valdez also in the rotation. And Emmanuel Clase. Genesis Cabrera. Like, this is like a, like, this is better than the American team.
Oh man.
Like, are
we have Trout at least.
Kidding.
And Pete. We have Pete.
Absolutely no one's gonna beat this World Baseball Classic team. Oh, this graphic has Starling Marte in center field. Then who's that in left field? This one just has their photos, and so I don't, like, I'm trying to figure out who that is. Who's in left field?
Yeah, Team USA's pitching is a little shaky.
Yeah.
Unless Jake or Scherzer signs on, but I don't see that happening.
I think Scherzer already openly said he's not
doing that.
Because he's still, like, hurt, basically. Like, he needs to recover. He's old now.
Yeah. Oh, and also, he probably doesn't want to go all out in March either, because he's the type of psycho that would and hurt himself.
Oh, yeah, he totally would. Anyway, that was a very prolonged walk-off win, but I had a lot going on. I also, like, had some PT wins, which is good.
It's always good.
Yeah, like, I'm progressing really well in PT. Like, I kind of had, like, a bad, like, my follow-up appointment with the ortho did not go so well, and I was bummed out, but then, like, we worked on it very aggressively, and I feel like I've made a lot of progress this past month, so that was happy. My car also reached 100,000 miles literally while we were driving to the football game, so it's been, like, it's been quite the week. yeah. And I cannot wait to, even though, like, I know in my heart of hearts that the U.S. men's national team has literally no chance to beat the Netherlands in the round of 16.
Are they the Kiwis?
What? The Kiwis? No, yeah. That's New Zealand.
Oh, New Zealand.
This is the Dutch.
Oh, like, this is the Dutch. Okay, this is the Dutch. Oh, yeah. Oh, so, yeah, they have definitely no chance against the Dutch.
The Oranje, as they call themselves. And they're, like, ranked, like, third in the world or something. I think it's second, actually.
Yeah, I remember watching them a few years ago, and, yeah, they were really good.
To be quite honest, like, watching their group stage matches, I have not been super impressed with how they've looked this tournament, but that does not mean that they will lose to the United States. That would be a major, major upset. I'll tell you that. That would be a major, major upset.
Yeah, like, they can't go back to the Netherlands.
Yeah, both the Netherlands and the United States in this tournament have struggled to score goals. It's going to be a low scoring game. Like, both teams are, like, pretty defensively minded. So we'll see how they match up against each other. I mean, like, you know, anything can happen, obviously. And it would be so exciting if the U.S. made the quarterfinals. That'd be crazy. That would be a great outcome. This U.S. men's national team is really set up to compete in 2026. That is, like, the year that I think that they might do very well in the World Cup. Right now, they're very young team, very young and kind of unseasoned. So we'll see. This is kind of like the test run and the next World Cup, in which they will be the host nation. So they'll kind of have, like, home field advantage too. I think could go pretty well for the U.S. But this has been a fun tournament.
Yeah, shout out to hometown hero Tyler Adams from Wappingers.
Yeah, from Wappingers. Yeah. Yep.
So that's a little further north for me. But yeah, way to go, Tyler Adams.
New Jersey and New York, both very well represented on this World Cup roster.
Yeah.
That does it for the show this week. You can find our writing at AmazingAvenue.com. We're finishing up. We're wrapping up our season review series. We've got more season reviews coming down the pike for you. We're also doing our daily morning news posts, as always. All the off-season rumors, we got that all for you over at AmazingAvenue.com. You can follow Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can follow this show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. You can also follow A Pod of Their Own on Instagram and TikTok. We are new on both those platforms. More content to come, but you can follow us there too in case Twitter sinks into the ocean. in. Follow us on Instagram and TikTok at A Pod of Their Own on both of those. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Surovich.
Please subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from and rate and review the show. It really helps people find it. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasting.